Okay, we're going to be starting on the top of Ches Amud Aleph, 8a, shortly. We start off with a machlokes, and the central issue of Sugya 18 is, must something given for Kiddushin be appraised? That was the topic. And we said that there was a machlokes, but there were two versions as to what the machlokes was between Rabbah and Rav Yosef. If a man was makadesh a woman with silk, he gives her silk, and hareyat makudeshes libis silk zeh. So Rabbah says, there's no need for an appraisal of the silk before the kiddushin, and the kiddushin is valid, because it's certainly worth a penny. Rav Yosef says the silk must be appraised, and the kiddushin is not valid. Then that's a cryptic description of the machlokas. Now the Gemara has two versions. What is exactly, what are they arguing about specifically? So version number one, there's three possible scenarios. So version number one says like this. If he told her that he is mekadesh her with kol dehu. Kol dehu means any amount. As is. He's not specific, not purporting that it has any values per se. But he says, whatever it's worth, this is what it is. So in this version, they say, all agree that no appraisal is needed. Everybody said that's okay. Because he didn't, it's worth a penny, he's not promising more. On the other hand, if he told her that the silk is worth 50, and then they find out it's not, then all agree she's not mekudeshes, because she, by him saying 50, she agreed it, she wanted 50 and not less, and that turns out it wasn't 50. There'd be no argument there, it's for sure not good. When is the argument? The argument in the case, when he told her that it's worth 50, and it is, but was appraised after the Kiddushin. That's where I should put the bracket. So Rabbah does not require an appraisal, for it is worth 50. What's the problem? Rabbi Yosef requires an appraisal. Why? Since women do not know the value, if it's not appraised, she doesn't resolve that she wants to be mekudeshes. In other words, she isn't certain that it's really 50. She's not sure. She doesn't want to appraise it. You said 50. Well, if it's 50, okay. But till I know for sure it's 50, I'm not wholeheartedly agreeing to the deal. That's what Rav Yosef would be saying. While Rabbah says, listen, at the end it was worth 50. So, you know, it's everything turned out okay. And we didn't have to have her wholehearted approval beforehand. That seems to be the argument. That's version one. Version two says, not only do they argue in that case, but let's go back to one of the cases where he said there was no argument. They will also argue when he is mekadesh bekoldahu, for any amount. And why does he, why would Rav Yosef argue it's for sure worth a penny? Rav Yosef says that we know that kesev makes a kedushin and shava kesev, something worth money. But worth money has to be similar to money. And what is that? Just like money has a set known value, when you give somebody $5, you know it's $5. So he holds that when you give me something worth money, we have to know exactly what it's worth beforehand, because then it becomes like money. If you're not exactly sure, then it doesn't count. He's a stickler for that. We gotta know exactly what it's worth. While Rabbah says, why do I know exactly what it's worth? So that is the two versions of the argument.
Rabbi, it could be imitation silk, maybe.
But is it worth? Is it worth a penny?
Yeah, maybe not.
Imitation silk is still worth a penny. Come on, still worth a penny.
It's just a penny.
A pruta is like the smallest coin denomination. So the guy, when he says kol, he says, "I'm not telling you how much it's worth. I'm not even trying to mislead you. I'm saying it is what it is."
Yeah.
Now, we agree it's more than a penny? Yes. Could it be 50? Maybe. I'm not purporting to say it's going to be 50. And I'm not promising you that it's 50. I don't want to mislead you. I don't know what it's worth. I don't know what it's worth. It looks nice. Isn't it enough to marry you? Rabbah says yes. Rabbah says no. It has to be just like money. When I give you money, I know exactly how much money I'm giving you. So that something that's worth money, we have to know exactly what it's worth. That's the second version saying they argue over there as well.
So that logic, you'd have to appraise the ring before you got married.
Yes. Exactly yes, 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 yes.
We all know it's worth more than a penny, but.
Yes, 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 yes. You're making
it
good.
Hold by that.
We'll see. All right. Anyway, so that's where we left off yesterday. So what's going to happen basically is Rav Yosef, who holds that in either one of the two scenarios, the silk must be appraised in advance, he is going to bring two proofs to his position. That's what we're going to be learning today. He's going to bring two proofs to his position. Okay, now with that, we will try to start the Gemara. Right at the top of 8a, okay, Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef begins to present a proof to his position that we must be appraised beforehand. So he's saying like this, Mino amina la, where do I know this that I say that the item that you give has to have a defined worth before the Kiddushin? He's going to bring it from another place in Torah, and he wants to draw a similarity to it. Tanya, for we learn in a Brisa, we're now talking about a Hebrew servant. Hebrew servant is somebody who steals. He doesn't have money to pay back. He is sold to an owner. That money is used to pay back the money that's owed. And now the owner is entitled to have him work for X amount of years that he bought him for. Okay, but there are ways that the Hebrew servant can become freed if people will pay the master out. All right, so now the question is, what method of payment can be used to pay the master out to free the Hebrew servant? And that's what Abraisa says the following. It says, the Pasuk says the words, Mikesef Miknaso, from the money of his purchase. So let's take a look at the verse in question over here. Let's go to Leviticus 25:51. Vayikra 25:51. Try that again. We're waking up all the apps today. Okay, that one went fast. Okie dokie, here we go. We're talking about Shemitah, okay, and what a guy goes free by the Jubilee years, okay? So it talks about a whole bunch of situations and et cetera, and in 51 it says, Im od rabo shanim lifneim, if there's still yet many years to the guy's servitude, lefihen yashiv geulaso mikesef miknaso, he shall give again the price of his redemption out of the money that he was bought for. All right, and you have to calculate based on how many years are left. So let's see what this pasuk is talking about. The key words over here are going to be the last two words, mikesef miknaso, from the money that he was bought for. And then the clause before it is also an important clause. Yashiv gulaso, he shall give again the price of his redemption. Those are the two clauses that are going to be germane to our sugya. So let's take a look at the notes that will explain a little bit more. He says like this. The verse which describes the redemption of a Hebrew servant, here we're talking about from a non-Jewish master. Now, here we're speaking in a case where for whatever reason the Jew was desperate, he sold himself to a non-Jewish master. Now we have a mitzvah. Now we have a mitzvah to get him out of there. Okay? It's a mitzvah to get him out of there, yeah?
Servant and not slave. Is it the same?
Well, you know, it depends who's
because we've always been talking about a slave.
Well, both of us. Okay, I don't want to go there right now.
Okay.
If a Jewish person, Jews who have people who are their servants, don't treat them like slaves.
Yeah.
Okay. But anyway, but here you have an issue where a Jewish servant had a non-Jewish master. Now that's a bad situation, and you try to redeem him. So the pasuk says, if there are yet many years left in his term of servitude, he shall repay his redemption accordingly. Now here's the words now, from the money of his purchase. Mikesef miknaso. The language of the passage implies that money was used to effect the servant's purchase, and the Brice understands from this that grain and utensils are excluded as instruments that may affect this kinyan. Basically, the Brice is saying when you want to buy out the Jewish servant from the goy, you could do it with money. Mikesef miknaso, from the money of his purchase, and that affects his purchase. Meaning, say, he was purchased with money. You pay him back from the money of his purchase, meaning he was purchased with money, implying only he only could have been purchased with money and not with grain or utensils. Only money could have done it and other things couldn't have done it. So basically we're saying the way of buying a Jewish servant can only be with money and not with grain or utensils. That's the main point he's driving at over here. So, and this is the Braisa. From the words, Mikesef Miknaso, from the money of his purchase, we can deduce Bekesef Hu Nikne, that a Hebrew servant can be purchased with money. Ve'eino Nikne B'tvua Ve'kelim, and he cannot be purchased through grain and utensils. Okay, if you want to buy a Jewish servant, and I guess in general, let's talk about in general, I guess any types of acquisition, it can only be done with cash. And not with shove kesef. Not with things that are worth money, like grain and utensils.
Silk.
Well, whatever.
Yes.
So now, that's a brisa. That's a brisa. So now let's analyze that brisa. Why are we, what is the scenario of excluding grain and utensils? What's wrong with grain and utensils? Why are they not good? What kind of grain? What's going on over here? So Gemara is going to make the following suggestion. Now that's the end of the brisa. Brisa just says, you see that a Jewish servant can be bought with money, not with grain utensils. Period. So now Rabbi Yossi is going to give his spin on it. He's going to say, well, this, isn't this the way we would understand a brisa? And there will be a proof to my opinion. What is he going to say? Hi, Tvua, Vekele. Let's look at the scenario where we say that grain and utensils are not acceptable to buy him. Hey, Midami, what is the case over here? How do we understand it? Well, do we mean to say, Elayman, do you mean to say, the lo miknavu klal? Do you mean to say that the servant cannot be purchased through these items at all? Meaning that's absolutely not a good purchase. Finished. It's not good at all. Is that what it means? Well, then you got a problem. Because we said that earlier clause, before the words kesef miknaso, there was the clause, Yashiv Geulaso Amarachmana. The Torah says the words Yashiv Geulaso. He shall repay his redemption. And we'll see in 1 second. This is a conflicting brisa. You'll see in 1 second. Let's see what it says here. A Hebrew servant can be redeemed from a non-Jewish master when he or his relatives compensate the Gentile for the remaining years of his term. In describing this procedure, we're saying he can be redeemed. Scripture could have simply written, Lefihan Geulaso, according to his years in his redemption, we pay it out, according to his years. But the Torah adds an extra word. And on top of Lefihan Geulaso, it says, the word Yashiv, he shall repay. That's an extra word. If you want to pay him out, you repay. Why say repay? Is thus considered superfluous. And is taken to connote that shava kesem items that are worth money can be used for his redemption just as money can. So they learn that the redemption can be used with things that are of equal to value of money. As we're going to say in the next line. That extra clause of yoshiv l'rabos includes shava kesef kekesef. That items worth money is having the same status as money. So the brisa cannot mean to disallow purchasing a servant for grain and utensils. If you can buy the servant back with grain and utensils, why couldn't you sell him for grain and utensils? That is, once it has been established that items worth money can execute redemption, it can also be deduced that these items can execute the servant's purchase. For scripture juxtaposes the words geulaso, his redemption, to the very words, to the phrase mikesef miknaso, from the money of his purchase. Since it is so, it cannot be the case that the Bryce invalidates grain utensils as a means of effecting a servant's purchase. In other words, when there is a Bryce that says, when you want to purchase him, you can only purchase him with money and not with grain or utensils. Problem is, but when we redeem him, the extra word yeshiv says you can redeem him with grain and utensils. And it's the clause right next to the other clause, which seemed to be a comparison between redemption and selling. So how can you tell me the redemption is not with vessels and grain, while the purchase is not, while the redemption is? So that doesn't seem to me, we can't say it's a simple case of grain and utensils, because it's a contradiction in and of itself. What's the matter?
Where do we get the connection where you can redeem them with grain and utensils?
That's another brisa from the extra word yashiv. You return from the brisa.
How do we get from yashiv to grain and utensils?
The extra word yashiv is an extra word of redemption. It's a superfluous word. So the brisa says from that superfluous word, we learn you could use not just regular money, you could use other things. Return them in any way possible. Yashiv goes, you return his redemption. Couldn't just say redeem him. What's this return? In other words, in any way. Not just with money. That's the brisa. That's what the brisa understood it.
In the brisa itself.
Another brisa says, that's what yashiv means. It's not my point to understand how. That's what it says. The extra word teaches you something. So the brisa says, the extra word teaches you, you can redeem him with things worth money. That's just what it says. Okay, we'd have to look into more detail to know how they came about. But the word yashiv is an extra word. The extra word has to teach you something. It's teaching you that. The problem is, well, then it's a conflict. Because we just learned from the next two words that kesef, the money of his sale, means he could only have been sold with money. So what's going on? You sell him only with money and you could redeem him with more than money? It should be the same way, because the two verses, clause, are juxtaposed. So you'd figure it'd be similar in nature one way or the other. Well, the two brises seem to say two different things. So therefore, we cannot say it's just straight up when it says you can't you can't sell them for grain and utensils. It can't just mean that. Straight grain and utensils. It can't mean that because it's conflicting. You can redeem them with grain and utensils. So what does that first brisa mean that it can be sold with grain and utensils? So if you want to say, well, I'll tell you what, when it excludes grain utensils is when grain utensils aren't worth a penny. That's when we exclude that as a sale. The E, and if you want to say, delays with shava pruta, if you want to say, well, the brisa means to exclude only grain utensils that are not worth a pruta, that cannot be used to purchase a servant. You want to say, well, that ain't no chiddush. My area, tfuva kem, why do you have to pick on grain and utensils? Afilu kesev nam, even money itself, that's not worth a shava pruta, can't be used to buy a servant. So that can't be the scenario. So what is the scenario? With the brisa is saying that money and utensils cannot purchase a Jewish servant, while we see they can redeem him. So there's got to be a different kind of situation of grain and utensils that is no good. What is that case that's no good?
If you don't have value.
I got to figure out stuff, but if it's no value, I don't need a pasuk.
You have to have a value.
Oh, Elalav. Oh, good. Elalav. But must we not make the following conclusion? The ace for shavar pruta, the grain and the utensils is worth a pruta, but they were not yet appraised before the sale. Vekivan the lokaitzi, since a set value was not defined, lo. The brisa rules they may not be used to affect the transaction, such as the servant's purchase. That's what the brisa excluding. If you want to purchase a servant, it can't be with grain utensils that have not been evaluated first, because you got to have an appraisal. So notes explain further. Clearly, this is so for all other explanations of brisa have been disproven. Right? There's no other way to explain the brisa that says you can't sell them with grain utensils, because really, you can redeem it with grain utensils. You got to say the redemption is speaking where it was pre-valued, and to buy them is speaking where you didn't appraise it beforehand. And now we see it without appraisal, it doesn't work. So let's go back to silk. So silk has to be appraised before they can affect the transaction. Kedushin is a transaction. Selling a Jewish servant is a transaction. So now we see that must be the only way we can explain the brisa. That's why he assumes it's a proof. Now, the price didn't exactly overtly say that grain utensils that have not been pre-evaluated are not good for transactions. It's Rabbi Yosef saying, well, what else could the price mean? What else could the price mean to say it's not a good transaction? If it's worth less than a penny, we know it's not worth it's not a good transaction. If it's been evaluated, then why can't it be used? Because we can see you can redeem him with grain and utensils. Must be it wasn't appraised beforehand. Oh, that's my proof. So you marry a woman, it's not appraised beforehand. It's not a good condition either. That's what Rav Yosef will say. Now Rabbah, he argues on him, he's going to have to give us a different interpretation. So the Idach, Gemara now is going to suggest that Rabbah would say, well, that's not an absolute proof. That's not an absolute proof. And I'll counter your proof. So the Idach means that the other guy, the disputant, Rabbah, why does he not feel it's a good proof from there? Well, we'll see. He's going to say, not exactly a proof. Honky Comer, he's going to say the Bryson means something different than what you're saying. And what is that? Okay, it's a little bit tricky here now. He's going to say, what the Braisa means to say is Vitoras Kesef Hunikne. Through the method of money, a Hebrew servant can be purchased. Gemara is excluded from the word Kesef. Kesef Miknaso, from the money of his purchase. The Braisa says you use money to purchase a servant, you cannot use grain and utensils. The Braisa wasn't meaning to say that if I want to use grain or utensils as a monetary purchase, it's not a good purchase. That's not what it's saying. It's not what it's saying. Remember, whatever interpretation we learn is a dochik pshat in the brisa. Because however it is, the simple interpretation is totally cannot be. So we're trying to find one. So Rabbi says, well, it's something where you didn't evaluate before. So Rabbi says, I'll give you a different dochik answer. What it means to say is, when you're purchasing a servant, it has to be with a kinyan kesef. An acquisition of money. Money is there, but not a different type of kinyan. What the Bryce is excluding is another type of kinyan to purchase the servant. What does it mean? A kinyan of kesef, a kinyan of money, that's a good way to purchase a servant. But a different kinyan, such as Veinikna Bektoras Tvulkein, but not with a kinyan that's unique to grain and utensils. And what is that? We're going to see a kinyan chalipin. A kinyan chalipin, that's what the Braisa is going to say. A kinyan chalipin is not a good type of kinyan to buy a servant. Let's take a look at the notes. According to Rabbah, the Braisa teaches that a Hebrew servant can be purchased through kinyan kesef, an acquisition through money. And for that matter, anything worth money is also kinyan kesef. If I give a guy $100 cash, is that a monetary transaction? Yes. What if I say, I give him $100 worth of grain as money. Isn't that also a monetary transaction? Absolutely. Just, it's worth money. It's a monetary transaction. The price is saying only monetary transactions help to get a servant. And for that matter, if it was grain, even if it's not appraised, it's still a monetary transaction. It'll be fine. So what did the price mean that grain and utensils aren't good? Because grain utensils quite often aren't used only for monetary transactions. They're used as a chalipin, as an exchange. That's a different kind of a kinyan. Let's talk about it here. Chalipin is referred to here as the method of grain utensils, not the value, the monetary value of grain utensils, but the method of kinyan that's associated with grain utensils when not used for money. For it's these types of items, as opposed to money, which can be used to execute the chalipin exchange. Okay, well, how do we know? In other words, chalipin means, a chalipin is basically, I want to buy something from you, I don't have the money. Well, let's say you want to give it to me. We have to make some kind of a kinyan. Make some kind of a kinyan. So one kinyan is I just hand you, like when I buy your chametz, I give you a handkerchief. You take the handkerchief in exchange. Chalipin means exchange. For you taking the handkerchief, it's more of a symbolic gesture. For you taking that in exchange for that, you're going to sell me your chametz. That's called a chalipin. So that's another type of kinyan. That's a kinyan you use when you don't got any cash. That's a simple way of looking at it. Or you want to give it to somebody, right? And their other methods are not readily doable. Okay, for whatever reason, you can't do other ones. So chalipin is a nice, simple way. Here's my handkerchief. Here it is. You take it. Now we're making an exchange. You get a handkerchief, and I get whatever you want. So now, you wouldn't use money as a chalipin, because money is money. That's legal transaction stuff. We would do something that's not overtly money, per se, and that, you know, grain utensils are things not like money. And they could be a chalipin. So what the Bryce is saying is, if you want to sell or buy a servant, that can only be done with acquisition of a money sale, or for that matter, things equal to money, but not a chalipin transaction cannot work. We'll see why. But that's not working. Now, let's check in general. Their ability to act in this role, money, grain, and utensils, to be a chalipin, is derived from a verse in Ruth. Because it says in Ruth, when Boaz wanted to marry Ruth, and there was a whole idea of what about the lands that she owned, and that he would be able to get her land, he says, "Vizos lifnim b'Yisrael alagula v'atmur l'kaim kol davar shalaf ishnal v'nasrael." Formerly, this was done in Israel in case of redemption and exchange transactions to validate all matters. There's no money going here. One would draw off his shoe and give it to the other. That's another chalipin. Here, I'd like your property. Here, take my shoe. And now we exchange my shoe, and now I get the property. That's the source, the biblical source, that there's something called chalipin. Okay, the verse is mentioned of a shoe is understood to allow for any utensil to be used as an item of exchange, and the words all matters are taken to sanction even the use of products, produce such as grain. So there is another kind of kinyan. These are two separate kinyanim. There's a kinyan of cash, and cash or anything we're saying it is worth cash, and that's the basis of the sale or the transaction. Or we could say chalipin is the basis. It's not a cash sale. I just want to give it to you, or whatever I want to do, and I'm just making an exchange. Here's the shoe, and I get the property. So, what this price is saying is, when we talk about acquiring a Jewish slave, and it says money works, and not vessels and grain, so Rav Yosef meant that vessels and grain do not act as a money transaction if they have not been evaluated beforehand. Rava says that's not what the price is saying. Bryce is saying that money as a money transaction can be used. And for that matter, grain and vessels that are being used as money can also be used as a money transaction, even if we don't evaluate it. So what are we excluding grain and utensils? As a chalipin type of kinyan. That's what they're saying. A chalipin kinyan does not work to get a Jewish servant. And that's what he's saying. Umay Nino. So what is the problem with doing as a tfu and kalim exchange? What method are we talking about that generally is associated with grain and utensils? That is chalipin. The word chalipin, that a chalipin is not a good method of transaction for reasons the Gemara is not going to discuss right now. Okay, that's the insight. The chalipin, that's what the pricing. A chalipin is not a good transaction, but it's something to do with grains that have not been appraised beforehand. Gorin says, well, that's not a bad answer, but it's one wee little problem, because your answer won't work for everybody. You're saying that's what the Bryce is teaching. The Bryce is teaching that the chalipin doesn't work. I need a special pasuk to tell you, you know, to money and not grain and utensils to exclude that they don't work by a chalipin. But there's a problem, but only by this case, by a servant. But wait a minute, we have a general opinion of Rav Nachman that says that grain and utensils never work for a chalipin. So why would I need a pasuk to teach me this? Well, Rav Nachman who says, the Amar Paris of the chalipin, Rav Nachman says that produce cannot affect chalipin. Ever. Ever to make a chalipin. So why would I need a price to exclude Paris as a chalipin if I already know it's not good? So what are you going to use it for then? In other words, if Paris was generally good for a chalipin, so we can say, okay, but by a servant, chalipin doesn't work. But according to Rav Nachman, it never works at all. What are you going to do? My ikalamemer, what are you going to answer? So that's not going to work. So that whole answer failed. So in other words, I don't need a brisa to say that. According to Rav Nachman, who says fruits don't work for a chalipin, I don't need a special brisa to get a pasuk to say it doesn't work by a servant. It never works. So why do I need a special pasuk for that? That's just one more step. Eliolam, but we can say, no, We're going to go back, and we'll go back to one of the first possibilities that we rejected. One of the answers we said is, well, let's say the grain's not worth a pruta. He said, well, it doesn't have to teach me that. It's not worth a pruta. It never would help. No, he's going to say, that's what it's excluding. Grain that's not worth a pruta. Now, you're going to say, wait a minute, but what's the chiddush? Ukeda amret, and you pushed that possibility away, didn't we? We said, my ear yitzvu v'kem, what's the difference if it's grain or utensils? Afilu kesef nami. Money also doesn't work if it's less than pruta. What an insight to say, you can't sell a Jewish servant with grain and utensils that are worth less than a pruta. Well, we know less than pruta doesn't work by money. He'll give you an answer there. Now I'm going to give you an answer. The answer is like this. It's a lo mi boy kamar. It's a not only this, but also this type of answer. In other words, the Brisa chose to use grain utensil because this is the chiddush. This is the chiddush. And he's saying like this. This is what the Brisa means to say. Lo mi boy goes without saying kesef if you give money. D.A. space of a pruta in. If it has worth a pruta, you could buy the servant. Low, and if not low, that I don't have to tell you. But here's the insight. But grain and utensils, Ema, I might think that if they're worth less than a shavruta, they would be good. Now, why in the world would you think that grain and a utensil worth less than a shavruta would be good?
They're still useful. You can still do something.
Well, it's almost. Because the benefit is closer. In other words, when you have cash, less than a pruta, there's no benefit. At first, I got to sell it. I got to buy something. But if I've got it right here, I'm hungry. Here, you're giving me less than a pruta worth of grain. I could eat it right now. So I would think if the pleasure is immediate, we waive the requirement for it to be worth a pruta. I would have thought that. I would have said, what would I have said? Come on. Gomar umikdinavshe. The prospective servant will commit and sell himself to servitude for things that are worth less than a pruta because the pleasure is imminent. I would have thought that. Kamashlan, that's the insight that no, despite this reasoning, the Torah says they can't be used if it's less than a pruta. So it comes out, Rava has knocked off this proof. Let's just review this idea. Rav Yosef said, I have a support because the Brisa says if your servant wants to sell himself into slavery, it cannot be done with grain and utensils, and we can't figure out a case. And I guess the only case we came up with, because it wasn't appraised in advance. That would have been a proof to him. That's the only scenario they could have thought of. And Rambam says, I'll think of a case where the grain and the utensils were worth less than a pruta. Rebbe didn't like that. What do I need the insight? If it doesn't work, money less than pruta, why would I think grain is less than pruta helps? So I'll tell you why. I would have thought that grain less than pruta helps because the pleasure is immediate. With a rule where money doesn't work as a shavruta pruta, but I don't get immediate pleasure. But the grain, I can already eat something right here and right now. I would have thought that perhaps less than a pruta is okay. The Brisa says it's still not okay. And that's the proof from the Brisa. So therefore, there's no more proof to Rav Yosef's reasoning, because I have another way of learning the Brisa. Okay, so tomorrow, Rav Yosef is going to try again. He's going to bring another Brisa to support his position.
Is Rav Yosef happy with that?